नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कंठ 10 Chapter 6, Text 2, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Kaṃsena prahita ghaura Putana bala ghatini Shishuṃs chachara nighnanti Pura Grama Vrajadishu. So, text 3. Nayatra Shravanada. Nayatra Shravanadini Rakshognani Swakarmasu. Kurvanti Satvatang Bhartur Yatu Dhanyaschatatrahi. My dear King, wherever people in any position perform their occupational duties of devotional service by chanting and hearing Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnoho, there cannot be any danger from bad elements. Therefore, there was no need for anxiety about Gokul while the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present. Purport, Sukadeva Goswami spoke this verse to mitigate the anxiety of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was a devotee of Krishna, and therefore when he understood that Putana was causing disturbances in Gokul, he was somewhat perturbed. Sukadeva Goswami therefore assured him that there was no danger in Gokul. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Nama Shroi Kari Jatane Tumi, Thakaha Apana Kaje. Everyone is thus advised to seek shelter in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and remain engaged in his own occupational duty. There is no loss in this and the gain is tremendous. Even from a material point of view, everyone should take to chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra to be safe from all kinds of danger. This world is full of danger. Padang padang yad vipadam. Therefore, we should be encouraged to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra so that in our family, society, neighborhood, and nation, everything will be smooth and free from danger. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Yilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Shrishtam Manamapi Shachi Putra Matra Surupam Rupam tasyagrajam urupurim maturim goshthavatim Radha kundam girivaramaho radhika madhavasham Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shrigurum tamnatos Pandeham shriguru shiyataf patakamalam shrigurun avaishnavamscha Shri Rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatan vitamtam sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamstra. Srila Prabhupada begins his commentary on this verse, purport. Purport means bhavart, the Sanskrit word is bhavart, which means to give the meaning, give a feeling of the meaning. So he begins his purport by stating that Sukadeva Goswami spoke this verse to mitigate the anxiety of Maharaj Parikshit. Why should Maharaj Parikshit be in anxiety? It was events that had already happened, already finished. So whatever had happened. And there was no used to be in anxiety. One may feel in anxiety that something bad may happen to us today or tomorrow in the future. But if something's already happened, Why should you feel anxiety for it? Well, it's a feature of psychology that we treat that a narration of events which have taken place in the past, that as they're unfolding and we don't know about them, we respond with various emotions. That's how these novels and movies, all fiction, they're all based on that principle also. And that's an even more, something that happened in the past, you may say there's no need to feel anxiety about, but some novel that where it's just complete imagination, but still people feel what's going to happen, although they know that nothing's going to happen because nothing ever did happen, it's just someone's made-up story. So a narration of something happening in the past, we may feel some anxiety, and we may feel, even if we know the story, just like people know the story, probably the best known story in the world throughout the ages has been that of Ramayana. Nowadays it's probably Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, at least in the Western world. We tend to think that the Western world is the whole world, although there are many people. Can you believe it? There are many people in uncivilized countries of the world, like India and China and countries in Africa, who have never heard of Harry Potter. So they don't give a damn about Harry Potter. Actually, I also have no idea about what Harry Potter's all about. So I'm fortunate in that regard. Some kind of modern mystical nonsense. And that's all I know about it. Ram Leela, Srila Prabhupada comments about that people like to go on hearing it again and again and again. And each time, even though you know what's going to happen, still the feelings are generated, is it not? They feel some anxiety that Sita, she's going to get kidnapped, and then she does get kidnapped, and then you hate that Ravana, and feel elation when Ravana is killed. And actually, when Ravana is killed, every time we hear the story of Lord Rama, we feel more and more, whichever sentiments, all these various sentiments are felt throughout the narration of Lord Rama, as we hear it more and more, the more we feel those sentiments, because we become closer and closer to Rama. Whereas in a mundane story, I must admit, I read The Lord of the Rings. I never read Harry Potter, but I did read The Lord of the Rings before Srila Prabhupada gave me something very significantly better to read. So when I finished reading, I thought that was a good story. And after some time, I thought I'd read it again. But the second time, no fun. It didn't have the same charm as the first time. Whereas with Krishna Leela and Rama Leela, we hear again and again and again, and it's ever new, always new. See here all the pictures of Krishna's Leelas. Here's Ras Leela, Govardhan Leela, Goshta Bihari Leela, so many Leelas, Vastra Haran Leela, Makan Chori Leela, so many Leelas are depicted. Now, even hearing one time, for non-devotees, if they hear one time about a young boy stealing butter, it doesn't, you know, it's not such a big storyline. It's not going to get big sales like Harry Potter. It's not what you might call a great storyline, that one boy steals some butter and then the women become upset and they complain to his mother. It's not, you know, it's not exciting. There's no murders there. Of course, there are a few. Krishna gets to kill quite a few people. But it might not seem to have the same appeal as some intricate story. But its appeal is there, that it's going on even after thousands and millions of years. Ram Leela, Krishna Leela, people like to hear. Harry Potter won't be popular in 1,000 years, that's for sure. We wouldn't mind if he wasn't popular even in 1 day or 2 days from now, because it's a diversion. These are diversions from hearing the real stories. As Srila Prabhupada writes in his introduction to Krishna book, that people like to hear novels and stories, let them hear about Krishna. So Krishna's pastimes, we like to hear them again and again, because Krishna is Akhila Rasamurti. He is the emporium of all rasas, all different exchanges. And Krishna is Atma Atma. He is the soul of every person. So that we feel for Krishna. Every one of us feels for Krishna, because Krishna is more dear to everyone than the individual person themselves. That's our illusion in this material world, that we place ourselves as being very important, and we suffer miserably by doing so. What is suffering in this material world? Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi, that is suffering. Birth, death, old age and disease. But these are actually the symptoms of suffering. The actual suffering is the separation from Krishna, because we're not with Krishna. We can never be happy. So those who are situated in their proper situation of full service to Krishna, absorption in Krishna, they feel for Krishna even more than for themselves. So everything about Krishna is fascinating to them. And we see that, although modern people may think this primitive, because they may think it primitive that in Indian culture people repeatedly hear the same story over and over, the same things over and over again. And they take delight in that. And people in the modern world may think, well, that's not very sophisticated. We should have all different stories to hear, more and more new information. But that's all just all these books and stories and novels. They're just all piles of garbage that fill up the mind with all kinds of useless things. Even if it's some biography, biography of someone whose activities are of no actual importance. Or it may be some classics like Shakespeare, classic writing. So, all right, we can say Shakespeare is supposed to be. I don't know if it's... Does anyone read Shakespeare these days? I don't know. No, Shakespeare's out of fashion. So anyway, that's considered high culture, and it probably, you know, it's probably higher than the pulp novels or the cartoon books that you have. Yeah, you have cartoon books here, right? Superman, Batman, and all that kind of thing, and all kinds of different things still going on. But it is irrelevant to the actual reality. All these stories, of whether they're so-called real or simply imaginations or a mixture, there are what are called, what's that, historical novels or something like that, or biographical works which are with weaved in is a lot of extra added imaginary details. So, yeah, biographical novel, that's it, biographical novel, or historical novel. But it's all irrelevant, meaningless. Krishna is the life of all that lives. So Parikshit Maharaj, he felt some anxiety that Putana has been dispatched to kill Krishna, even though Parikshit Maharaj knows that Krishna cannot be killed. He's heard what is now organized as nine cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, although at the time, it wasn't that Shukadev said, okay, that's the end of the eighth canto, now I'm going to start the ninth canto. That's a later division. But he'd already heard how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And no Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, or any kind of demon can overcome even Krishna's expansions, what to speak of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. But nevertheless, for the very reason that Parikshit Maharaj is a pure devotee of Krishna and is qualified to hear about Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, therefore he feels transcendental anxiety hearing about how Putana is dispatched by the wicked Kamsa. The word Kamsa in Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan hearing that word, they would feel fear. And how can there be fear? Because Krishna is Abhay Charan. By taking shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, one can be free from all fear. He is Bhayahari. He takes away all fear. One answer to that could be that, well, there has to be some fear to be taken away. So the devotees, they feel fear, but not exactly in the same way as materialists do. Materialists feel fear that their imaginary situation within this world will be destroyed, or they feel fear that someone will notice that I'm overweight, or someone will notice that I'm underweight, or someone will notice that I'm going bald, or someone will steal my car, and ultimately they fear death. But a devotee's fear is different, because a devotee is so much concerned about Krishna that he feels, now Krishna may come to some harm. Although philosophically he knows that no harm can come to Krishna. But that is, of course, that is going on under the Leela Shakti of Krishna. His, Krishna's potency by which his pastimes are enacted. Otherwise, it would be pretty boring being God, wouldn't it? If you're just sitting there and everything goes right all the time and no one really cares about you that much because you don't need caring for. Right, you can look after yourself, right? God, he doesn't need anyone to look after him. So he's just sitting there and it's pretty boring just being God all the time, and nothing can go wrong. Nothing can ever go wrong and everything. So pretty boring. So Krishna becomes as if one of us, and that his devotees feel anxiety for him is all part of Krishna's pleasure. That his devotees feel anxiety, which he mitigates, is all part of Krishna's pleasure. And to add to the fun, Krishna himself forgets that he's God, sometimes. Forgets and doesn't forget. Otherwise, where would be the fun? That if Krishna fights with Hiranyakashipu, fights with Kamsa, but if it was just, Krishna could just look at him and they'd fall down dead, but then where would be the fun? Or not even look, just by thinking. So Krishna is very funny. He's the supreme enjoyer. Enjoyment means sharing with others, and to do that, one has to be on the same level. You can't intimately relate with someone if you're not on this, if you're not part of them, if you're so superior to them, then you just, how can you relate to them? So Krishna becomes as if one of us. And 2 days ago in Houston, I was speaking about how devotees should, devotees of Krishna all over the world should be concerned about India, because it's not just any land, it's not just one another political unit within this world, but it is the land of Krishna. So that is unique in Indian religion, if you want to call it that. But people in Western academia, they want to put everything into different boxes and classify it. So South Asian religion, Hinduism. So one unique feature is that God becomes one of us. He's not just sitting up on some cloud in the sky or some amorphous gas floating around or light, but he's one of us. You can actually feel he's one of us. And even today, there are many people in India by the name of Yadav or Yaduvanshi. They're the same family as Krishna, and they feel Krishna's one of us. And even today, the people of Vrindavan, they feel, well, Krishna's one of us. So you can't come very close to someone unless you feel he's one of us. And if he's one of us, then you feel, naturally you feel very close, whether well-behaved or not well-behaved. Unless you live with someone and you interact with them and you know them intimately, then where is the question of love? How can we love God or love anyone, first of all, if they're so much in a different category from us that we can't have any relationship with them? Just like the President of the United States, actually he's an ordinary person like all of us. Actually, you're all much more elevated than the President of the United States, but speaking from a what we might say a secular perspective, he's an ordinary person, as we are ordinary people, who got elevated to that position. And us being ordinary people, there's no question of us having an intimate relationship with him. He's just too big a man. We can't even get close to him. I think nowadays, with all the security arrangements, they used to go around, when they were seeking votes, they used to go around shaking hands, like 10 hands a second or something, and patting babies on the head and kissing babies. I think they probably don't do that anymore, is it, because of all the security arrangements? I don't know. But even if they try to be one of us, so to speak, there are too many people. You just can't deal with them all, and you just can't have an intimate relationship with them. And then with all the security and everything, you just can't come anywhere near to them. They're just too much in a different category. So that's one consideration. Why we can't get someone we can't love because they're so much socially superior to us. We can't love them. Or if they are, we just don't know them. I mean, there's a problem in the Abrahamic religion's conception of God. Is not, do they not know him, but they don't know anything even about him. That makes it even more difficult. I mean, if you know something about someone, at least you have some idea, but if you don't even know anything about them, like, where, of course, in Islam, they have the 99 names of Allah, so they have some names. But they don't know who he is, where he lives, what his father's name is, what his wife's names are, because he has many wives, who his girlfriend is, or girlfriends. If you're going to be intimate with someone, you should know, what do they like to eat? What are you going to cook? What are you going to cook for them? Well, I like pizza, so I guess he must I'll cook some pizza, but if it's not what he likes, you should find out from his mother what he likes to eat. If you're going to feed him, that's one of the items of love, to offer someone some food. So if you don't know anything about him, then how can you love him? And then even if you do know something about someone, there has to be intimate dealings with someone. Otherwise, someone can be an acquaintance, but there's no question of love. So Krishna becomes one of us. Not becomes, he is one. From our vantage point, we say that, well, Krishna is God. You understand him as God, but he's playful cowherd boy. That's how he lives. But from the perspective of the Vrajavasis, the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna is a cowherd boy. God, well, some people may say that, but they don't take it very seriously. So they may know also he's God. That we find in the songs of the gopis, they say, Nakalu gopika nandano bhavan akhila dehinam atma antaratma drik. They say to him that you are not simply Nakalu gopika, and you're not simply the darling child of Mother Yashoda, but you also happen to be the indwelling seer within everyone's heart. So they know he's God, but for them, it's not that much interesting that he's God. They want to kiss him. You can't kiss God, but you can kiss Krishna, if one is so fortunate. So this is the mystery of Krishna. And this Krishna, the people of India, they're so fortunate that he lives as, especially Vrindavan, he lives as one of them. He lives among them so that they feel what he feels. They intimately feel. They're completely emotionally tuned with him, just like Parikshit Maharaj is feeling anxiety for Krishna, although there can be no anxiety for Krishna. Krishna is never in anxiety. But sometimes his devotees, he often puts them into anxiety so that they almost die, as we find in the Kaliya Leela, that Krishna was giving such mercy to Kaliya. But it appeared that he was captured by this nasty, poisonous snake and was going to die, and the residents of Vrindavan, they were all going to die. So to save them all from dying, Krishna just, okay, I'm having good fun here, but anyway, I'll stop that because they're all about to die. So Krishna came and revived their life. And then Krishna coming back from Kaliya when it looked like he was dead, it was hopeless. He's captured by this terrible, poisonous snake who, even if you breathe the fumes emanating from his nostrils, you'll die from the poisonous vapor. And Krishna's captured by him and taken underwater. And the residents of Vrindavan are almost dead. And then Krishna came back. And then that anxiety that they'd felt for him, that grief that they were going to lose Krishna, then that became replaced by joy, multiplied thousands. Even though their love for Krishna was already unlimited, it increased thousands and millions of times. Does that make any sense? Unlimited becomes more. Any mathematicians here? Infinity multiplied by anything equals what? Infinity. It's already greater than... Well, if you multiply it by zero, but that we're not Shunyavadis. The Shunyavadis, they want to multiply Krishna by zero and make everything into zero. So we should stomp on their heads, that's all. Because they're so envious of Krishna. All this Agha, Baka, Putana, they're all represented in the modern world by Shunyavadis or Mayavadis, those who want to nullify Krishna, who want to make Krishna just like some stone. Everything, like stone. We shall enjoy. Krishna shall be an object of our enjoyment, if at all we give him any importance. We shall chant his name, knowing ourselves to be the same as him. So devotees' feeling for Krishna is, it's not this sentimental that, yes, yes, we love everyone, we love Krishna also. Actually, a devotee of Krishna does love everyone. Krishna is suhridam sarvabhutanam, and the friend of all living beings. And the devotees also are maitra karuna evacha, advaishta sarvabhutanam maitra karuna evacha. The devotees, they have no envy towards anyone, or rather they are without envy toward anyone, and they're full of kindness and mercy toward everyone. But nevertheless, they cannot tolerate this Mayavad, which wants to nullify Krishna. They want to make Krishna as if just someone else. Or we are Krishna. We are chanting Krishna's names, knowing ourselves to be Krishna. So such people, they want to destroy all the rasas of the spiritual world and make everything simply into one, that Krishna will not enjoy. They're envious that Krishna is the center of enjoyment. All this, kamsa, putana, all that, envious of Krishna. Krishna is enjoying. They don't like to see that. So, although the devotees are very friendly and merciful to everyone, but they don't extend tolerance or a false tolerance towards those who are directly envious of Krishna. Now, this may seem to be contradictory, because a devotee is friend of everyone. Yeah, he's a friend of everyone, just like Krishna. He's the suhridam sarvabhutanam, the best well-wisher of everyone. But he also kills Putana, Shakatasura, so many demons. He kills them. That is his friendship toward them. Because their mentality is so wicked that if they maintain that, that will be the mentality that they have is it is pratikul, it's unfavorable, or works against themselves and against all others. It's bad not only for themselves, but it's bad for all others also. So Krishna very kindly kills them to stop their sinful activities, which are inauspicious for everybody. So in the same way, a devotee is very friendly toward those who are envious of Krishna by opposing their wrong ideas, which are most inauspicious for themselves and for anyone else who happens to hear them. Such persons, although they may superficially talk about Krishna's pastimes or chant Krishna's names, they're like Putana, who's described here, who comes as if appreciating Krishna, who comes as if she wanted to serve Krishna, but she has a very different intention. She's extremely envious of Krishna. So devotees, they should know who is actually a devotee and who is Putana. Not everyone who comes on as a devotee of Krishna is a devotee of Krishna. If we have any sympathy for Putana, then we cannot be a devotee. We may try to argue a case for Putana. There should be a case. If someone's arrested, they should have some trial, right? There's some trial going on. Where is that? In Florida, is it? The mother killed her own baby. It's a big thing in the news in America now. Even now, I mean, in America, people are killing their mothers, thousands every day, the cows, and killing. You can kill a child in the womb, that's okay, that's good, actually. helps to keep the population down, etc., etc. They have so many reasons. But to kill, once the child comes out of the womb, you shouldn't kill it. Still, they have that sensibility. They didn't start to eat their own children yet. They didn't come to that point yet. So, the mother who is accused of killing her child, I think the case is not, you're not allowed to say she, unless, until the verdict is pronounced, but it seems to be clear-cut case that she did so. She's given a trial. So who will be the defense attorney for Putana? Who will have any sympathy? We should not have any sympathy. We'll all, we may say she should have a fair trial, but no. She's guilty. She's wrong. There's nothing good can be said about those who are envious of Krishna. Krishna, he sees something good. Krishna saw something good in Putana. That's Krishna's kindness. He saw that in her previous life, she was the sister of Bali Maharaj. Ratnamala was her name. It's a nice name, but she didn't have a nice personality to go with it. And when she first saw Vamana Dev, she had some motherly, affectionate feelings. She thought, oh, what a beautiful little boy. Whoever is the mother must be very fortunate to have such a nice boy. I would like to have such a nice boy, to suckle him at my breast. Motherly feelings. You see, even Hitler had a mother. Osama bin Laden had a mother, right? So, however demoniac a person may be, someone feels affection. The mother under accusation in the Florida court, she also probably had some affection toward her child at some point. So, later when the sister of Bali Maharaj saw, actually this boy is Vishnu, our old family enemy. We hate him. How could I have ever had any feelings of affection toward him? And then she wanted to kill him. Her mood changed. So in the next life, she came as Putana to kill him. But that desire to suckle him at her breast, she was able to fulfill that. So Krishna sucked out her life and punished her for her sinful activities and her offenses. But Krishna also remembered that she had some affection toward me, and therefore he awarded her the position of a nurse, that she could, having destroyed her sinful mentality, he gave her that benediction. So, once the devotees, they don't hate anyone. If the sinful mentality is destroyed, then anyone, whatever, however sinful they may have been in the past, the devotees can accept them. That's Prabhupada's mercy. He didn't reject us. We were so sinful. He didn't reject. But he did reject the sinful activities. We can't go on with sinful life and be a devotee. So these are some lessons we can learn. That's from the first line of the purport. Maharaj Parikshit was a devotee of Krishna, and therefore when he understood that Putana was causing those disturbances in Gokul, he was somewhat perturbed. So Srila Prabhupada quotes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Nama Shroi Kori Jatane Tumi Takaha Apana Kaje. Take shelter of the holy name and continue Apana Kaj, which means whatever work you're doing, you continue doing that and take shelter of the holy name, and everything will be all right. Krishna will look after us. He's quite competent of looking after everyone. He can look after himself. He can look after everyone. So take shelter of the holy name. This material world is miserable and dangerous, but Krishna is Abhayashray. He is the fearless shelter for everyone. So however bad this world may be, and there are so many predictions that it's going to become bad and worse day by day. There's so many predictions. We used to hear predictions of the shift in the axis of the earth planet, and then there'll be an ice age, and so many things we used to hear. Now we're hearing that there's going to be food shortages, and we're not just hearing about it, but at least in India, the prices of food have gone extremely high, and the weather patterns throughout the world are changing, and so many bad things are predicted. Well, it's already predicted in Shastra. It's that in Kali Yuga, everything will get worse day by day. Tatashchanu dinam dharma satyam shocham shamadaya kalena balina rajan nangsham tyayo balang smritihi. Everything gets worse day by day in Kali Yuga, among which are prominent dharma, it decreases. Observance of dharma, satya, truthfulness, there's not much left to decrease, it's already zero. Now, if it are more like in the minus position, where, yeah, that's another symptom of Kali Yuga, that simply by asserting something, people think it's true. Like someone asserts, Judgment Day, May the 21st. And then everyone believes it. Or well, not everyone, but a lot of stupid people believe it, just because someone says it confidently. Dharshyatvam satyam eva hi. All these points are elaborated in Srimad Bhagavatam. That if someone just asserts something, people think, oh, it must be true, because he's very confident. So, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, kalena, by the mighty power of time, lifespan, mental strength, physical strength, all of these will decrease day by day. It becomes a very dangerous and nasty position. But Krishna always remains the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can always take shelter of Him. And in this Kali Yuga, by the easy process of chanting His names. So let us take shelter of Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit felt anxiety. Krishna didn't feel any anxiety. Krishna is always happy. Hare Krishna, any question? Please. Yes, that's a very confident hand up.
My question, thank you. I have a two-part question. The first part, I've been studying recently the Srila Rupa Goswami being instructed by Lord Chaitanya Dashamita Ghat. And there, he's explaining the difference between the mood of the residents in Vrindavan and those in Mathura and Dwarka. And he gives this quality that the residents of Vrindavan, they are not interested in Krishna's opulences, but they're just interested in loving Him. Like you were making that point, that He's God, but you can't, who wants to kiss God? Let's kiss Krishna. So my question is Parikshit Maharaj now being here in the 10th canto, is this an introduction now to that spontaneous mood of love from the residents of Vrindavan? Is that what's being portrayed here?
Is Parikshit Maharaj being introduced to Vraja Leela? Now, this is a very interesting question, because it's not that in Dwaraka there's no spontaneity, because love means there has to be spontaneity. It's not wooden, right? Love. I mean, there's definite affection between Krishna and the residents of Dwaraka, who are actually the residents of Mathura. They were all in Mathura. Well, not all of them, but many. They got transported from Mathura to Dwaraka, and then later more came, the queens, and it expanded, and the family members expanded. So some spontaneity is there. Even though they know Krishna is God, they act very intimately with him, particularly in the case of Satyabhama. And there may be others also who, that's described, the sons of Krishna, they're very formal, standing before him. But there may be others who are less so, like Uddhava. He's described as the greatest devotee in Dwaraka. And there must be, although we don't hear about it in Bhagavatam, there must have been some jesters also. That's every king has his jesters. And wrestlers, the kings go and wrestle like that. But definitely the mood in Vrindavan is very much more free-flowing. Now, was Parikshit Maharaj, is he just learning about this? Well, no, because everyone, I mean, even today all over India, however people relate to Krishna, they all know about Vrindavan Leela. It's just a matter of how much one enters into that and appreciates that. But all over India, people appreciate, I mean, people who are pious and devotees, they appreciate the gopis and Krishna. And they may not have a very deep theological understanding, but they appreciate Krishna. They like to hear about Krishna stealing the butter. So it's not that Vraja Leela is unknown at any time, but of course, the entrance into that. Now, Shukadev, he's bringing Parikshit and everyone else who wants to, who aspires to, into that, bringing him into that more and more. But Parikshit was, that's why he's the right person to hear from Shukadev. Shukadev, there were so many rishis who came later when they heard that Parikshit was going to hear from Shukadev. But Shukadev, he wouldn't have spoken to them. He spoke to Parikshit, and the others came, but Shukadev was primarily speaking to Parikshit because he was a right person to hear, because from his, that's stated by Suta Goswami that Parikshit from his very birth was a great devotee of Krishna. So, and Shukadev was also a great devotee, so when they came together, there must have been some talk about Krishna. Come on, tell us all about it. Shonaka said this to Suta. So, yeah, he was already a very elevated devotee. But particularly he knew Krishna as Parthasarathi, the chariot driver of his grandfather. So, we could say that he was being initiated by Shukadev into the mellows of Vrindavan. He must have heard of them, must have known of them. But now he's hearing Bhagavatam, Shukamaka Adamrita Drava Sangyatam, which from the lips of Shukadev, this nectar which becomes very soft and palatable and sweet and easy to digest. So that certainly he would have heard of that before, but getting it from Shukadev, it becomes more accessible, or rather that one can actually enter into that by the mercy of Shukadev Goswami. Yeah. So many hands. Yeah, please.
Maharaj, you were talking about the qualification that Putana had to come in contact with Krishna from.
Yeah, we don't want to get that kind of qualification. Don't try for that.
Well, in her previous life, she was a sister of Bali Maharaj, and she had this desire to suckle the.
To suckle Krishna at her breasts.
What was her qualification to become a demon?
Her qualification to become a demon? Well, she was already a demon as the sister of Bali Maharaj. He was the king of the demons. He was a devotee, but he was surrounded by demons. So what was her qualification? I guess it was Dambha Darpa Bhimanascha Krodha Parashamevacha Agyana Cha Bijatasya Partha Sampadam Asurim. The qualifications of the demons are Given in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, this arrogance, conceit, pride, anger, harsh speech, ignorance. These are one who cultivates such qualities becomes qualified to be born in a highly demoniac situation.
It seems that there's a dual process going on in that.
She had some feelings. Well, that's what I said. Even, I said Hitler's mother must have had some feeling for him. So Hitler, he had his girlfriend, right? Eva Braun, famous to this day. So he must have had some affectionate feeling toward her. Hiranyakashipu had affectionate feeling toward Prahlad. He thought, oh, my son, how nice. He's being trained to be a first-class demon. But when he found out that he wasn't becoming a demon, then that affection changed. So it's affection on a wrong basis. But because it was directed toward Vishnu, even for the wrong motive, even though it was directed toward Vishnu, then Vishnu accepted that. That's his kindness. That's why he comes to this world, to benefit everyone. Krishna consciousness is not a mechanical process. There's also causeless mercy, despite the protestations of some people that there's no such thing as causeless mercy.
Actually, thank you, Maharaj, for the next class. My question was that when Ambarish Maharaj, he was cursed, but Krishna protected him through Sudarshan Chakra. And then when Parikshit Maharaj was cursed, Krishna allowed the curse to act. So sometimes, like my stage, in one place, how to see both as Krishna's...
Again, Krishna's not mechanical. Whatever is favorable for the world, Krishna, he sees that is done. So through protecting Ambarish from the curse, Krishna demonstrated his love for his devotees. And by not protecting Parikshit from the curse, Krishna arranged for the Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken. So Krishna has his purpose. He's not bound by any laws that he has to act in any certain particular way, in any circumstance. So devotees should feel that Krishna is always protecting me. Even if the situation seems very bad, we should always think, well, Krishna has his plan. And you never know what Krishna's plan is. So it's better to go along with Krishna's plan than instead of trying to adjust the universe, which is what the non-devotees try to do, we should just adjust our mentality to thinking that Krishna's looking after me. That's all.
Just now you said Krishna's not bound by any law. What do you mean by that?
Krishna's not bound by any law. What do I mean? Well, it seems like a self-evident statement. Krishna's not under any... There's no one can dictate to Krishna, you must do this. Nor is there any natural law of the universe that Krishna is bound by. According to the laws of the universe, if you drink one bottle of some sulfuric acid, right? You're going to have a hot stomach and quite possibly die from that. Krishna can drink oceans of sulfuric acid and it won't harm him in any way. That's just an example. No one can compel Krishna to do anything, nor is Krishna subject to what might be considered the laws of the universe.
So you mean like he's eternal?
He's absolute. He does what he likes.
And you mentioned...
No one else can do that. Only Krishna can do that. Yeah.
You talked briefly about predictions. Is there a book or chapter that touches on this, you know, predictions.
Yeah, that's given in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, predictions for Kali Yuga. There's more than one chapter on that, much of which we can see is coming about now, today, in the modern world. Yeah, then.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, my question, and my second question has to do with, in the verse, it's being described by Sukadeva Goswami that by hearing the glories or enchanting the holy name, everything inauspicious becomes changed, becomes auspicious by Krishna's presence. Yeah. So my question has to do with, when you were speaking about that, I was remembering my Guru Maharaj, and Srila Prabhupada would send him out to very wealthy homes, families, to collect donations for preaching. But sometimes he gives a few examples, one in particular where even he went very early before the gentleman went to work, so he knew he would be able to catch him. But his wife, she was very much afraid to let my Guru Maharaj come in. One, he was a sannyasi, but two, and later it was disclosed that if her husband was to engage in Krishna service, everything would be lost by the name Hari. You see?
So that's a feeling or superstition in some, among some Indians,
This is my question, that we are saying that by the process of devotional service and by the chanting of the holy name, everything becomes auspicious. But when we look at the advanced devotees, we look at the disciplic succession, you know, they're all sannyasis, they're all basically, you know.
But
for the most part.
But when we say auspicious and inauspicious, that's understood differently from the way that materialistic people see it. The devotee thinks, if I lose everything in this world, very good, then I have nothing to distract me from Krishna's service. Or if he gets much opulence, he thinks, well, Krishna's given me that to engage in Krishna's service. For a devotee, it's the external situation. He's not auspicious or inauspicious. It's the mentality of being in the proper consciousness of serving Krishna or not serving Krishna. Otherwise, for a devotee who's actually situated in Krishna consciousness, it doesn't make any difference whether you're wealthy or poor. He's neither attracted to wealth nor repelled by it. He's neither disturbed by poverty, nor does he think that poverty is something better than being rich. That's called being free from dualities.
Maharaj, in this mood of pure devotional service, there seems to be a tendency not to become progressive or to, for example, to develop. There seems to be almost a type of avoidance of responsibility, of avoidance of productivity. In the name of that. Could you explain that?
Well, the modern idea of productivity and development is a modern idea based on the misconception that we are meant to enjoy this world. But in Vedic culture, the basic substratum is dharma. Everyone is supposed to perform their duty. So it's not that like development and you have to build new buildings and make new inventions, but one should perform one's duty. Living in society, one should contribute to society responsibly. So devotees are supposed to do that also. There may be cases, avadhut, who are complete, but then they don't take anything from society either. Those who are avadhut, they're so detached. They don't disturb anyone. They neither, kuch lena dena nahi hai, said in Hindi. They neither take anything nor give any. They're detached in that. But if one is living in society, then he has a responsibility to contribute to the society also. A sannyasi may do so by giving spiritual knowledge. A grihastha does so by just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Takaha Apanakadri, whatever. He has some work to do in society, something to discharge for the temporal benefit of others.
Maharaj, when we read the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there's such deep feeling that he expresses his inadequacies and how he feels so fallen, and he's, there's no one more sinful than me, and on and on. And so in the process of purification, we feel all, you know, as Krishna reveals how fallen we are internally, we may feel hopeless that how will I ever become a real devotee of Krishna's devotee? And then we see these great personalities who are really exalted. They write these prayers.
How are we ever going to get there? Is that the question?
Yes.
It seems discouraging.
It seems discouraging.
Well, you're right, he is mentioning Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers, but they themselves give us the prayers in themselves. They are the very means by which we can overcome or remain hopeful. Just like that Gopinath prayer. And Bhaktivinoda describes himself as a sinful rascal full of material desires. He has no means of purification, but he just maintains hope that, Gopinath, you have to save me. I have no means, but I am your person, so don't neglect me. So maintaining hope for the hopeless. So you go on. Devotees' resolve is that anyway I'm hopeless, but what should it? Does that mean I should drink alcohol, smoke cigars, and what does that mean? No. Let me go on chanting Hare Krishna. Even though I'm completely hopeless, let me go on chanting Hare Krishna, and someday Krishna will surely be merciful to me, even though I'm unqualified. That's a devotee's mood. And certainly Krishna will be merciful to such a person. Don't give up. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Gaunitai ki jai. Shri Radha Kala Chanji ki jai. Jagannath Subhadra Baladevi ki jai. Hare Krishna.